What's up? It's a members only show. Hope everybody's doing good. Get your questions into the live chat and we will answer a whole bunch of them if we can, as many as we can. Get your life together and come see Rob out on the Summer Porch Tour. What is it? Summerporch.com? You always change your website. I can't keep up.
I know. It's not the greatest strategy. Yeah, Porch Tour. I got DC this Sunday, and then next weekend I've got kind of close to Ithaca, close to Detroit, and then Pittsburgh, and of course Toronto in the middle of all that with you. I'm road tripping it, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Toronto's our next stop. Yeah, we got Toronto and Denver coming up. I'm really looking forward to both of those.
I hope I got the right information because my passport was stolen last year. I never replaced it, but I got the passport card. And from what I gather, you can cross the border by car with the passport card, but you can't fly. So
is that true?
That's everything I've read, and well, hopefully I don't find out otherwise at the border.
You're going to drive up to Toronto? Is that the plan?
Yeah.
You're going to drive because you don't have a passport. This doesn't seem
no, right, but then though. I lined up the other gigs to make it make sense. I'm doing upstate New York en route, and then I'm doing Michigan and Pittsburgh coming home.
Okay, I get it. So it does make sense. But also what would make sense would just be like expediting a new passport.
Nah, I don't want to deal with the government right now.
All right. Well, far be it from me to argue with anyone ever saying that.
For a one-off gig in Toronto, I just...
No, I understand.
I debated saying no just to not get the passport. I just don't want to do... It's just, you know, there's only so many things you can add to my plate. There's too many little things on the plate getting a passport. I can't add it right now.
You really are speaking my language at every whether it's not wanting to deal with the government or just procrastinating. I get all of that. It is also just so annoying and stupid that like you're like, wait, so I can come in here by car with this, but not by plane with this. How does that make any sense at all?
Yeah. Well, and hopefully I don't find out otherwise. And then also, luckily I'm not in any mention, so I hope they just accept I'm just road tripping through Toronto between two gigs on my route to Detroit. Worked the last time. I had three fellas in a car just telling them I wanted to see Montreal. And they're like, all right, it's a nice place. Come take a look at Montreal.
Guys, buy tickets to the Toronto show. We'll probably be there. That's really the takeaway from all of this. We will most likely find ourselves in that situation. Someone asked, Dave, any shifts on Tucker after the Fuentes interview? What do you mean by that? Have I shifted my opinion? No, I haven't shifted my opinion on Tucker. No. Tucker's great. Dude, I don't know. I mean, I know Tucker. We've spent a fair amount of time together. I think Tucker's a sincere guy. And I love, in my opinion, Tucker's like a fucking American hero to me, dude. The biggest right winger in the country calling out Trump's war and Trump's crimes. And yeah, I just, no, this guy's a fucking hero to me. Like, I understand why, he rubbed Nick the wrong way or something like that. But I also think Nick could have been the bigger guy after that and just gone like, hey, we're playing different games. They had been cool in their conversation. You know, I saw like one of the little video thing, or I saw, I should say, a clip of Nick's show after he was on with me. And it was a classic Nick Fuentes, very funny. But even like he's going at Tucker for like bringing his dog on stage at Turning Point or whatever. And I don't know. It all just seems kind of petty to me. Like he's the biggest right winger in the country. And he's really helping like anybody who's opposed to this catastrophic war. And I don't know. He was so good through COVID on Fox News. You got to be able to ally with some people. You got to be able to make friends with some people. And he's about as great a one to ally with, I think, as you can, honestly, at this point. So, no. Love Tucker Carlson. And what's the other? Dave, should Massey run as an independent and not as a Republican for president in 2028? Or are the barriers too high to get on state ballots without party affiliation? All right. I'm glad you asked me that question. Let me tell you something. I've been asked that question a few times by some people over the last 24 hours. I'll tell you about this off air, Rob. Anyway, sorry. I know people hate when you do that, but oh, Rob's getting this juicy information that none of you are going to get. Oh, it sucks so much. I'm sorry. I just can't. Republican. He's got to run as a Republican. He is a Republican. He essentially, if Thomas Massie runs for president, which I really hope he does, he's running as the guy who can pick up Trump's winning coalition. You know, like that's what he's running as. He's that guy. And that's what Republicans voted for. So, well, he can run an America First drain the swamp campaign, and he's uniquely positioned to do that with real deal street cred. You know, who, right, Rob, who from this administration can say they're for drain the swamp? You're fucking not. Who can say it? The guy who got the Epstein files released? Yeah, he could credibly claim he's for draining the swamp. He can credibly promise no new wars. Look at my track record. I've voted against all the wars. He's the guy, and it's got to be as a Republican. And it is for the answer, exactly the answer you gave. It's not that there's power in the brand. In fact, in terms of a brand, independent is a way better brand than Republican or Democrat. The thing is that all the rules are rigged against third parties. Bobby Kennedy, go look at the trouble he had running as an independent. You won't get on the debate stages. You're going to have to kill yourself raising money just to get ballot access. So you're killing yourself to fundraise just to be on the ballot, not even actively campaigning. Makes no sense whatsoever. Do it as a Republican. The reason, and I said this to Bobby Kennedy, he did not like it. I said this on the phone to him while he was running. But I go, look, man, I basically said something like, I was like, look, your campaign's amazing as a Democrat because you can give permission to all these Democrats for not, you know, not having to go along with Ukraine or COVID or whatever. And he was like, no, I'm not doing it to give permission. I'm doing it to win. And I was like, oh, well, you can't do that. but that in general, a third party run, because this is when he was talking about leaving the Democrats and going independent, a third party run, which I discouraged him from doing, a third party run is to make a difference. It's to spread a message. It's not to win. You run as a Republican when you're trying to win. And Thomas Massie should be running to win because he's got issues that super majorities of the American people support. He's not taking fringe issues. So you run to win and you do that as a Republican. Any thoughts?
My calculus on this is that there's just a big time amplifier of if you can actually take over the Republican Party. One of them is that, you know, as we just saw from the people who voted against Thomas Massie, there's got to be at least 30% of your winning coalition is just, hey, I'm a Republican, I'm team Republican, Republican team has to win. So if you overtake the Republican Party, you don't even really need to sway those people. You just got the people who are, I'm not the Democrats, yep, I'm the Republican. So you just have them. Also, if from what you've seen with Trump is that if you overtake the Republican Party, you can remold and shape the entire party. And so now you've got all sorts of people who are forced to be in line with your agenda. Yep. And so you're able to enact a little bit more. The only thing that's and I think he could potentially win the Republican nomination, which then changes the entire party, and then he could potentially win an election. So I actually think Thomas Massie is a real pathway to victory, and it would be a mistake for him to not run as a Republican. The advantage too, if you imagine like if Donald Trump ran as a third party initially.
Oh yeah.
What a third party could do is if you have a candidate who they probably won't win. But if you got someone who completely destroys one of the parties, you can fracture the other party and you could potentially actually break the two-party system in this country, which I think would be better long-term because you might actually end up with like more of a real centrist party and get, you know, some disenfranchised voters actually voting and backing candidates that they care for. Also, the risk on that is that you can end up with an extreme socialist with a smaller winning coalition. But I do think that there would be value to if we permanently dismantled the two-party system.
Yeah, but look, I mean, dude, in order to do that, you'd either have to be worth, you know, you'd have to be worth hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe billions, and be willing to self-fund, or you'd have to have like Peter Thiel or Elon Musk or someone like that would have to be like bankrolling the candidate. Because look at Bobby Kennedy. I mean, dude had some money and had huge name recognition, was from political royalty and all that shit. He didn't fracture the two-party system by running as a third party, and he didn't even ever have a shot of winning. The best he could do was partner up with Trump and then get the health department and then come out and tell you how great fucking
glyphosate is.
Roundup is really good for you or something like that. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, Massey's got to do it as a Republican. The point you make is a really important one, right? Because, like, even if you think, like, amongst, say, like, boomer, diehard Republicans, like your the Fox News watching crowd that got convinced Massey's a secret Democrat now or whatever, you know, they were all in on Mitt Romney in 2012, and then they were all in on Donald Trump in 2016, and whoever would have won that nomination, they would have been all in on them too. And to your point, if Donald Trump had started running as a third party, again, you know, Donald Trump did run on the Reform Party in 2000, didn't make waves at all. It was a different time. But even if Donald Trump was running on the same message, but he had just run as a third party, a lot of those were just, people would just not have liked him. That's just the truth. They just wouldn't have liked it. He had to have that R next to his name. And then that was social psychological permission that you're allowed to like this guy now. He could be your guy. So yeah, no question. About that. What do we got here? Another one. Dave, thoughts on the Ben-Gvir flotilla human rights abuse? Yeah, did you see this, Rob?
I saw the headline and I didn't want to read it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised to hear that Israel did something wrong.
I just recorded Provoked with Scott Horton and Daryl Cooper. I love those guys. Great show. They have a great show. I don't know if I was that great on the show. I end up just watching those guys and then I'm like, oh, I guess I got to say something. But
I know that feeling.
Yeah. Oh, Rob, you are good. So anyway, but yeah, we talked about this a bit on there and I thought Daryl had the best take on it, which was, if you guys don't know the story, like some human rights activists tried to get some aid into Gaza and Israel captured him. And then Ben-Gvir himself is like on video, like saying, welcome to hell and taunting them. Like,
this happened like 2 years ago, though. This was when that crazy anti-global warming person was there.
Greta Thunberg. Yeah. So that, but anyway, it's just the Daryl's take on all of it, which was just kind of interesting, is because this is like whatever his... He's the foreign... I mean,
he called them terrorists.
Yeah, well, he's the equivalent of Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense or something like that. And imagine, it's like, part of this is because Israel's a small country, but like he himself is actually out there, not like even someone from his office, but it's him. But Daryl's point was just like, you know, it just says something about like where Israeli society and certainly where the Israel's government is, that like a guy like that, like can't be reined in and in fact has to be given like this major post in a government, you know, position. It is almost like the equivalent of, you know, if there was like a real deal white nationalist who was the Secretary of State of this country, you know, which is like kind of a hard thing to wrap your head around. Like not just like had a podcast or you saw him on Twitter, but like that was the Secretary of State. It's kind of the way it is.
He also had that bad photo op with their hanging booth.
Didn't help.
Not for me to speak for the religion or Jewish people, but I wish that guy didn't wear a yarmulke.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, here, let's pull up the John Podhoretz video. Let's really make me and Rob uncomfortable about our heritage. Here's John Podhoretz. This video is going super viral for obvious reasons, but here was John Podhoretz. I've actually met him back in the day. At Fox
That's a real
News.
Name. It sounds like a news publication.
Yeah, no, it does. It's real. Podhoretz. He is the son of Norman Podhoretz, who was one of the, you know, really, you know, one of the most important neocon figures. Him and Irving Kristol really were like the godfathers of neoconservatism. And they all wrote for, I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I know they all wrote and edited, and it was Commentary Magazine was one of their big publications. But anyway, I read a couple of his dad's books that were actually very good. But then John Podhoretz kind of took over the family business and was never quite as good as, you know, his dad was kind of smart and interesting, and he just never really was. Kind of, you know, whole, I guess is often the case with, you know, nepotism enhanced careers, you know, just aren't as impressive as the guys who actually got there. But anyway, here was John Podhoretz, who's really lost his mind. But this was him talking about Thomas Massie's defeat. Let's play that.
I think it is a good thing if Massie and the people like him and others believe that if you cross the line into anti-Semitism,
if you cross the Jews
are going to use the power that we have openly to go for you. This is an existential issue for Jews. And the Jews who explicitly give money because they want to make it clear to anti-Semitic candidates that they are going to have to go through a buzzsaw and that they are not going to simply waltz in and be, you know, be, if they're treated with kid gloves by the New York Times, we are double time going to do what we can to expose who they are, to find out what we can find out about them that will harm them, and that we will do what we can to prevent them from taking office.
All right, before you say anything actually important, can I point out that here, he looks like a human thumb became a pedophile?
I mean,
if I ever get fat and look like that, please just put me out of my misery.
Oh, I will. You didn't have to ask me. If I will, I will kill you, Rob. Yeah, I didn't even realize I'd given you the clip of the beginning of like a show or whatever, but that's it. That's what we wanted to play. Can you just imagine though, Rob? And I didn't watch this whole thing. I've just watched this clip. John Podhoretz blocked me a while ago for calling him out for something. That, Rob, just imagine, like, you're concerned with anti-Semitism. That's the kind of the premise of what he's saying. And you think this is the answer. Like, it's like if somebody was like, I'm really concerned about getting beat up by a black guy. And they're like, so what are you doing? And you go, well, I'm running down to the project buildings and I'm calling everyone a nigger. And you'd go, that may not be the best strategy. Like that actually is probably going to ensure that you do get beat up by a black guy. Like, I would recommend against such a thing. And he's literally sitting here going, well, listen, here's what we do is we use Jewish money to unseat a democratically elected popular congressman. We use Jewish money to steal a Congress seat. You're like, yeah, I don't know how this could possibly backfire. Like, isn't it? It's just so interesting to me, Rob, that there's such, it's amazing how much like I'd be sitting here, say, like, when me and Nick Fuentes talk, and I'll be saying, you know, broadly speaking, he's like, it's the Jews and it's organized Jewry and it's, you know, Jewish supremacy or whatever. And I'm like, no, dude, it's Israel and it's the Israel lobby and it's these powerful Jews and these powerful Christians that are working together to do this. But don't just say it's Jewish money or something like that. But then over here, you have John Podhoretz going, no. It's Jewish money. Like, that's, I don't know. The point I'm making, I guess, is just like, Rob, even guys like me and you, I think in some way, let's say we were talking to like a right winger, like a white Christian right wing guy. You were talking to him and he said, Israel's doing all this fucked up shit. Israel's got all this influence over our government. We'd be like, yeah, I agree with you. And then if he just went and their Jewish money, always like me and you would probably have a little bit of like a, like, slow down, buddy. Like, why are you saying it like that? You know, even though it's not like necessarily like we disagree with what he's saying, we'd go, dude, why you got to call it like Jewish money? You know, like, it's okay. Yes, Miriam Adelson is Jewish. And yes, she poured her money in, but like,
but she didn't give it to Donald Trump in a bag of coins.
Yeah, right. I'm pretty sure she wired it. Like, we have technology now. But you know what I'm saying? But there's just something that's very striking about how, like, only you guys and, like, you know, you're sitting here, you call Thomas Massie an anti-Semite. He's not an anti-Semite. There are actual anti-Semites out there, and you seem to be in complete agreement with them. Very strange.
Any thoughts, Rob? Yeah, it's funny to put it that way, that this guy's in complete agreement with anti-Semites, that Jewish money is, like if you were writing the essay on the problem with the Jews, and the, I guess the premise was Jewish money is influencing American politics, I guess this guy is concluding or has the same thesis statement as an actual anti-Semite.
Right. I mean, it's like, it's just utterly bizarre. And he, you know, there's a moment in there, if you notice, and I really did think, I don't know, I don't know if you picked up on this, but it really did hit home with me, of just like, because there's something when you see something like that, you're kind of immediately struck by like the chasm that is between the way you view the world and the way we view the world, you know, like where, like, it's just, you're like, this is what we got to do to prevent anti-Semitism. And we're like, hey, this will clearly, this is, you're cutting a commercial for the anti-Semites, which by the way, is what's happening. Like, if you go look on Twitter right now, like everybody who hates Jews is sharing this, because like this is, you know, essentially you're proving their point, or at least making it look like their point is proven. And so when you see that, you go, the word that I was jumping on there is that he said this is existential for Jews. And I don't know. I mean, I guess that's the issue there, is that no, it's really not. Like, this is where you really get into like some like paranoia, like, and I mean like the psychological diagnosis paranoia. Like, this is, you're making a claim here that this is an existential threat to Jews, and the claim is that if Thomas Massie kept his seat in Kentucky, like Rob, we have an experiment of this. Like, Thomas Massie has been in Congress for many years. He's won re-election many times. You're telling me if he had been re-elected this year, there is an existential threat to Jews in America? Like, it's so far removed from reality. But when you get yourself into that mindset, like, in other words, hypothetically, let's just say it was actually an existential threat to Jews. Like, let's say the survival of Jews depended on Thomas Massie not winning his seat. Then maybe, I guess, the strategy makes sense from his point of view, right? Like, then, okay, we got to do whatever we can, because fuck, it's an existential threat. The issue is that this is completely untethered from reality. It is just not true at all. And so it's a mentality that, you know, I think an older generation of Jews really is kind of, I don't know exactly how to say it, but I just think that, like, amongst, say, like, our parents' generation, there really is kind of this view that, like, another Holocaust is right under the surface. And if anyone says, you know, I think what Israel's doing is horrible, or we shouldn't be funding Israel, that what they're really saying, you know, like, the only reason they could possibly say that is because secretly they hate Jews. They don't want to say that out loud, but they do. And because they'd love to Holocaust all of us again. There's this weird paranoia that people really do have.
I don't believe that this guy actually believes what he's saying. I think he's just given the sales pitch for full Israel support. Hey, we couldn't have this guy in office. And it's the classic, you know, deeming anti-Israel as being anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And he's just selling it. But I mean, even the way he's selling it, it's just as bad. So you're telling me Israel absolutely needs full American support and full control over the American government, and that it's an existential crisis if you got a single person in the American government who criticizes America's support of Israel? I mean, that's insane. And then what lengths will the Jews go to ensure that they're controlling the American government for a foreign power?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it really is something to just, like, kind of out loud be like, yo, listen, like, you have to support this foreign country or Jewish money will ruin you. It doesn't seem like a great strategy for, you know, I don't think Carnegie wrote this in How to Win Friends and Influence People, Rob. This, I must have missed this chapter. All right, let me go. Let's fish around the chat here. Get some questions in if you have them. Okay, I'm actually frustrated with how easily manipulated he is. Oh, what is this comment on a earlier post? My boomer dad is glad Massie is out and happy the new guy was a Navy SEAL. That means a lot to my dad. Yeah, you know, it is, like, it's unbelievable. And I really do think that this is where, even though the term has been overused at this point, but this is why the red pill, blue pill thing was such a useful like term, you know, from the Matrix. And there is something about like, dude, boomers are just blue pilled, man. Like they're just not, it's like, I don't know what to say, dude. You're just like playing Pong. And like, dude, we got modern video games over here, dude. Like there's like, I understand like the boomer impulse to be like, he's an Navy SEAL, served his country. This guy's giving the president guff. I like him. But like, dude, you just, it's, I understand. Listen, just love your dad. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter that he has the politics he has, but it is frustrating because it's very hard to get through sometimes that boomer programming is just like, and there's a thing where like, I mean, I don't know how old you are, how old your dad is, but like, you know, my father-in-law is what, he's 75 or something like that. And it's just like, even sometimes when I'll run into those brick walls with him, and I've red-pilled him a bit on some stuff, but even when I'll run into those brick walls, sometimes there's just a point where you're like, dude, he's 75 and he's not changing now. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, what are you even trying? You know, that old can't teach an old dog new tricks thing. There's some truth to that. I mean, I feel it in myself to a certain degree, but like, it's, you know, like, I'm sure you feel this too to some degree, Rob, but you know, like when you're 20, you kind of could be anyone. If someone's like, hey, come over here and be this guy with me, you might be like, all right, I'll go be that guy for, but like the older you get, the more you're just kind of like, I am who I am. There's I'm not saying like incremental or moderate, modest change is possible, but you're not really getting a radical shift of like who I am. I'm me. I've already decided that that's who, you know, and like 75, 80 year olds, you're like, dude, you're not going to convince them to completely see the world in a completely different way and recognize that everything they believed for 80 years was bullshit. Very hard to do. How are you doing? How are you doing on your parents, Rob? You blowing their minds with radical libertarian
thoughts? I've worked my dad on quite a few topics. My mom's trickier. She doesn't, but you know, it's cause, she doesn't, the last time, I was at home, I stopped by every once in a while and, I don't know, my mom made some comments about the Iran war. Like no one wants us to keep on going. And I go, well, Netanyahu does. And she goes, no, I can't believe that to be true. And I was like, of course. And then I just start like rattling off. She goes, and she's just like, I don't want to hear about this. And I'm like, fine. Then I'm not going to give you a hard time about it. She's like, I don't know anything about this target with you, and I'd rather live in my delusion of thinking that Israel's nice and he's a good guy. And I'm like, okay, fine. Then hold on to it. I don't need a...
But dude, like, that's why...
I will literally say that sometimes. Like, things will come up. I'll be like, you do not want to hear my opinion on this.
Well, look, you know, this is why it's such a useful analogy. The Matrix is such a great movie. But you remember that there's that part in the Matrix where the guy decides to partner up with the machines and go back into the Matrix, and he's eating the steak and he's like, look, dude, I know this is just a steak in the Matrix and blah, blah, blah. But like, oh God, I love steak. I don't really give a shit. It is like, you'll see that, but they'll have moments. Like I've had moments like that with my mother before too, where she'll almost like just be like, I want to be blue-pilled. You know, like she's almost saying, she's like, I am not asking for, and even in the movie, you always have to give them a choice, right? Like, you don't just force the red pill down their throat. It's your choice whether you want to come over here or not.
The one time I cracked my mom a little bit, I don't remember what the conversation was, but it was something at the dinner table and I'm lighting everybody up, which I typically don't do, but sometimes if other people push and escalate it, I'll counterpunch. Like, I'm very content to not talk about it, but if you start, particularly on COVID, because they were trying to get me vaccinated and then they couldn't believe how much information I knew about it and that I was forced to be reckoned with. But I remember once I said to my mom, I forgot what the topic was. I was just like, Mom, do you think I'm a stupid person? She's like, no, of course not. And I'm like, do you think I'm an evil person? She's like, no, of course not. And I'm like, so then why do you outright dismiss every one of my ideas? And that kind of sent her in a little bit of a whirl.
Yeah. No, that's not a bad way to approach it. But yeah, cause you know, it's tough for their mom to say they think that about their boy. Dave, thoughts on, well here, hold on. I'm sorry. I'm not going in order here, but thoughts on Ryan and Sager today, criticizing Bezos, saying that government regulation doesn't cause rent to go up. Oh, I don't know. Oh, here that Rob, they hit Milo. I want to be blue pilled on this. I don't want to know. But Ryan, I don't know. What do you say? What Ryan and they were saying government regulation doesn't cause rent to go up. Yeah, that's silly. Listen,
well, it most certainly does. You can argue that there's instances where it makes people safer, better off, which I'm sure that there are specific examples where it does, but it absolutely will drive up costs. Yeah, I mean, you can argue that it's worthwhile, that otherwise people would be in more hazardous conditions. But in my opinion, the market could take care of that. But to argue that it doesn't drive up costs, that's just not true.
Yeah, there's like I love both of those guys. But yeah, they got to read some Austrian economics, dude. You got to get that shit going, because it's just like you don't make these kind of. I got an argument with Ryan on Twitter once about, I think it was about Social Security or something like that. And he was like, well, there's a bunch of studies that really show that it does improve the standard of living for seniors. And I was like, you need a study for that? Like, yeah, you're giving them money. I was like, yeah, obviously they have more money than they would have if you didn't give them that money. The point is that someone's got to pay those taxes, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, well, the studies also indicate that it doesn't really decrease the standard of living of the young people. And I go, dude, you're taxing from one group and paying it to another. It reduces their standard of living by the exact same amount that you give to, in fact, less, because you got to pay the government workers and stuff. But anyway, I don't know. It's just, you know, talking with left-wingers about economics can be challenging sometimes. But he's goddamn maybe the best war reporter in the country. So what are you going to do? People have their strengths and weaknesses. It's only me and Rob who are right about everything. Okay, Dave, thoughts on Jeremy Kaufman wanting to abolish the LP? He's got a point.
The problem is what he might want to replace it with, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, what does Jeremy, someone will just recreate it anyway, man.
Yeah. Hey, Jeremy's really smart and really funny, and he's got his moments of hell yeah, go get him, and then you got his moments of, oh boy, what did he just say?
Yeah, he's like, if you were to just, you know, spray a machine gun into a crowd of people, you'll hit some bad guys. I like Jeremy very much, and I've had him on the show before and stuff. Very smart guy and very funny guy. Yeah. Goes a little off the rails sometimes, but hey, who amongst us?
Yeah,
doesn't?
That's what keeps us entertaining.
That's right. That's right. You know, should the LP be abolished? I don't know, man. I mean,
it's not very freedom oriented to try and abolish something. Let them do their thing and let them fail.
Well, I think he's running up for chair on the platform of abolishing the LP.
He's gonna unwind it. It's gonna be a forced shutdown.
It, which is it's obviously there's something trollish about the whole thing, because
no, I love that. I'm gonna put the party out of its misery.
Yeah, but like it would be so ridiculous.
Vote me in to shut it down.
But who's gonna like go through the effort of like being a member of the party, becoming a delegate, showing up to the convention to try to get the thing shut down? Like, if you really don't like the LP, you just wouldn't be a part of it. But anyway,
I kind of love that. It's hilarious.
I do. No, it's very funny, and it's making a fair point, which is like, what the fuck is the point of any of this anyway? And, I'm not sure anyone has a very good answer to that question.
It's tragic that we have the most beautiful political philosophy and something that nearly every American would prefer to the other two parties. And that we can't just at least get the message out enough to keep the bigger parties more in check of the fact that they hate freedom and that they want to rule over you. Yeah. And if you could, and if the party could just somehow do a better job of platforming good candidates that could just get on news stations and share this message. I mean, even in the campaign cycles, the problem is we just got a system now where the best liar wins. So even Donald Trump was an anti-war, candidate at the time. So I don't know how good even the pledges from the mainstream politicians are when they can completely reverse course anyways. Maybe there is no point, because even if you get the politicians to promise things that are more in line with what the general population actually wants and basically lie as if they're interested in freedom, they're going to walk it back once they're in office. So yeah, maybe there is no point even in the messaging.
Well, it's like, there's just no, I don't know, if you're talking about messaging, I don't see a particularly strong argument. Like when the plan was that I was going to run, there was at least like an argument for why that would amplify the message. I don't know. You know, one of the things that really kind of woke me up to this was like after I decided I didn't want to, and that I was like, oh shit, okay, we got to find someone to do it. And there's just no one, you know? I mean, there's some people who would be awesome if they did it, but none of them are even kind of interested in doing it for very understandable reasons. And then if you don't have that, which we don't, like, I mean, literally, dude, what the fuck? I mean, listen, I'm not trying to be a dick, but of the people running last year, like, would it have been any different if Rechtenwald had won the nominee instead of Chase, or if Josh Smith, or if, you know, I'm trying to remember who the other candidates were. Like, essentially, it would have been in effect the exact same thing, which is zero impact. I'm not trying to be a dick, but just like, if we're being honest here, none of those guys were like, none of them were good enough at messaging libertarianism, and none of them had enough charisma or a big enough platform, or were going to get on big enough platforms and really deliver. Like, it's just nothing was going to come of that. And then we got libertarians running in like every state for office, but are any of them really effectively sending a message, spreading a message? No. So, I mean, just being honest, like, we could just be podcasters and shit and do a better job of getting our message out there.
Maybe.
Like, what is the point? And then I should like make sure I say, hold that thought, Rob, but I should make sure I say that, like, there are really great people who are in the Libertarian Party still to this day. The issue is that there's also just really awful people. And it is something that the party attracts. Everybody knows this is a major problem, but there are so many people in the Libertarian Party who really are like, it's not even like they're in a book club. A book club would be a huge improvement because no one would make a book club their identity. And at least in a book club, you actually read. These are people who like don't actually read. They don't follow the news. They don't care about the country. They don't really care about liberty. They care about the Libertarian Party, their little powerless fiefdom that they fight over who was the assistant chair in the Georgia LP, whatever. I just picked Georgia random. I'm not saying anything particular about them. But like, there's a real problem with kind of like people who don't have lives, who don't have identities, who make being a member of the Libertarian Party their identity, and just always want to bicker and fight about everything, and, you know, are like incapable. It's not even that they can't get shit done. They don't even care about getting shit done. Their goal is what the latest drama on the LNC is. I see it all the time because, you know, I was very heavily involved in the party for years. And so I see these guys like on my Twitter algorithm or whatever, and it's just be people who just like never stopped. Like, if you remember up, I used to take part in a lot of the Libertarian Party infighting, but it was always because we were trying to do a thing. We were trying to take over the party, and then we had this vision of what we could do with it. And as soon as that vision went away, it was like, oh well, obviously I'm not like partaking. But then you find these guys, and it'll be the same guys who are partaking in the infighting then, and they're just all they do is post every day about the latest, you know, scandal on the LNC. After a while, you're like, guys, who cares? And I watched them, like, there was something that was going on. I can't remember. I don't pay attention to the details enough, but it was going on like at the beginning of the war in Iran. And they're all just arguing about it on Twitter. And you're like, guys, we just launched a war. Like, is that going to take up like any of your time? Like, do you even really care about this? Like, oh, 168 schoolgirls just died. Not a lot of liberty for them. Where you guys have anything to say about this? No, it's just their own gossip. I don't know. Sorry. Go ahead, Rob.
My strategy, if you put me in charge of the Libertarian Party tomorrow, what I would do is I would sit down, try and find the 5 congressional districts where it's easier to run a seat, and I would try and get 5 new Thomas Masseys in to actually influence policy. And then I would do a secondary campaign, a little bit like almost what AIPAC does or the NRA does, where you get kind of like your, where like, you know, this guy's an NRA approved politician, or this guy's a this, or this guy's a that. You got to try and actually create like just a freedom movement of events and scholars and debates and other stuff where the Libertarian Party itself is a messaging vehicle for people who are just interested in freedom. And start figuring out how you challenge, like, how do you create events that create a stink about the Federal Reserve so you can educate people to the issue of, hey, the Federal Reserve just to exist to have a banking cartel and steal your money. How do you, and then, you know, if you get enough momentum of people actually being aware of just the ideas of freedom and the corruption of government, and maybe you got a couple of people in Congress representing the party and actually fighting for these things, then maybe you end up in a situation similar to Donald Trump, where you have a massive voting block of people who identify as libertarians that can't actually win an election, that can force concessions from a candidate. And then you got to figure out some sort of a structure where you actually keep that candidate to their promises. And, you know, the promises could be as simple as no new wars of aggression. You know, it's just you keep it to like your three biggest things. And you promise, you know, that's a way that you can actually get some things done.
It's a great idea. It's not even a great idea. It's a great way of thinking of what you're doing. And the problem is, and I found this in the Libertarian Party, the problem with that is the membership. And they are just completely unwilling to even begin having the conversation that you're getting at.
Yeah. Like, well, the problem is, go for it.
No, go ahead.
What you describe of these people who just love their little position, you guys are just the same. You're just the gayest version of politics because you have no real political power, but you're just trying to hold on to that little thing, but you're not even doing it. Like, at least if you're in the Democratic Party with a high position, there's some glory and you get to go to events or whatever, and there's some prestige. If you're doing it for the seven people that you get to rule over in the corner, it's just stupid.
I mean, yeah, it's one thing to be an ideologue, but to be a partisan, like, you're a libertarian partisan, just pick one of the parties that wins sometimes. Like, why would you pick the team that never wins? Like, what are you also like a fucking, who's the team that played the Harlem Globetrotters? The Generals? Washington Generals? That. You're a diehard Washington Generals fan. You know what I mean? Like, you made that your whole identity. Now, listen, dude, I know I've told the story before, but it's worth just repeating quickly. But the Blake Masters thing really opened my eyes up to how kind of unworkable the Libertarian Party was. And if you remember that situation, it was Blake Masters, who was a former anarcho-capitalist. Now, not still an anarcho-capitalist, but was a hardcore radical libertarian. And it definitely drifted in more of a populist right-wing direction, but was still very good on a lot of issues. And he was running against, like, Mark Kelly, like the worst Democrat in the country. And the Libertarian Party was polling, was higher than the difference. Like, it was like a tie race, and the Libertarian Party was like a 5%. And so I helped work on the Libertarian guy to drop out and endorse Blake Masters, and I endorsed him. This was at the height of my juice in the Libertarian Party. Like, I was the preferred presidential candidate. We had just took over the party with super majorities. We took every single position with like 80%, 75% of the vote. Like, our people just dominated the entire, handpicked the entire LNC. They all wanted me to go for, you know, if there had been a vote of who the nominee for president should be amongst the party at that point, I would have taken 80% of the vote, including every single member of the Libertarian National Committee. Like, I had just come off a Rogan appearance that had gone super viral. It was like my biggest moment ever at that time. I had so much juice within the party. And then I went, hey, let's make this one pragmatic move. And it just, like, the record screeched to a halt. They were all furious at me. I remember I had to get on the Mises Caucus organizers meeting. So this is not the, these were my people. Most of the people on this meeting, Rob, if you could imagine, were listeners of the podcast who had joined the Libertarian Party because I said, let's all join the Libertarian Party. Like, these were my guys. They were furious. I had to sit there and talk to one after the other, and they'd say things like, what am I supposed to say, you know, to my members back home? And you'd be like, wait, what? And one of the things that was very eye-opening about this was that I just recognize that, like, if Blake Masters had been running as the Libertarian Party candidate, they all would have gotten on board supporting him. It was because he was a Republican that they were so against this. And my point being that, like, he was as much of a Libertarian as Gary Johnson was, as much of a Libertarian as lots of people have run on the Libertarian Party ticket before. But he wasn't a partisan. He wasn't in their party. And the reason why this was so eye-opening to me was that you go, like, wait, but guys, if you're all guilty of being partisans, then how can we expect the Democrats and Republicans not to be? You know what I mean? Like, you're almost proving to the point we made before that you were making about why Thomas Massey should run as a Republican, because it just gets all those kind of lemmings to just be like, okay, you're our guy now. You know, one of the arguments that, like, Thoe Bishop and some of the other really smart libertarians who didn't want to join the Libertarian Party would make is they go, look, dude, politics is all about a friend-enemy distinction. And so when you go, I'm a different party, you're immediately telling everyone you're their enemy. And now you're the enemy of the Democrats and the Republicans. So you're just everybody's enemy. And I didn't really buy that until I saw that the libertarians were the exact same way themselves. And then you go, oh, shit, it's actually true, you know? Even you guys who are supposedly organized over not being partisans. That's why you started a third party. We don't want to be partisan to either one of these groups. You're just a partisan to the third group. Well, shit, that's stupid. And it kind of was like, oh, this might be unworkable.
And I'll also just say that the last batch of candidates were so embarrassing that, you know, it's hard to be excited about the party. Particularly, what was the guy's name the last time? Negative. The trans guy?
Chase Oliver. He's not trans. I mean, he's just gay.
Well, yeah, but he's pro-trans.
That is gay. Gay is the gateway to trans. You start being gay before you know it, you're trans.
Yeah, and then before her, that lady.
Joe Jorgensen. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she was terrible, too. People, she was like a lefty liberal.
Like, people like this running are, and I mean this, and I'm not even trying to be a dick, but, like, they're a net negative to the cause for human liberty. Like, you just don't. I don't know, man. It's like going in. It's like if you, let's just say you go to do a debate, like a high profile debate, and you just know nothing about the topic. You're doing a disservice to whatever side of the debate you're on. You're just making it look like, look, the people who say this don't know what they're talking about. Well, similarly, I mean, you're just, there's no point in running a campaign if you're not generating any enthusiasm, excitement, bringing any new people to the movement, getting, you know, not increasing vote totals or anything like that. It's like, so what are you doing? You're just out here being a loser with libertarianism attached to that. It's really not helpful. All right, listen, we got to wrap up a little bit early, so a few more minutes. Let me get into this one. Okay, I honestly want to know what Dave thinks about Charlie Kirk investigation. It's pretty wild how openly corrupt the cover-up is. Baron Coleman podcast has presented a compelling, all capitals, a compelling case that official narrative is bullshit. Well, I'm not familiar with Baron Coleman. I'll check that out. I don't know, I guess is the shortest answer. I just really don't know. As you guys know, I don't like jumping onto theories that I don't have, you know, strong evidence for. So I guess, and also I did read, I think they, if I'm getting this correct, that they are going to let cameras in to the trial. I know in Utah, you're allowed to let cameras in. It's at the judge's discretion. And I believe the judge is saying they will let cameras in to the Tyler Robinson trial. So that's very interesting. You know, if he was a patsy, you would think that a trial wouldn't be taking place. So we'll see what comes out of that. I will say that the fact that Joe Kent, who was the director of counterterrorism, has publicly said that his investigation was shut down and that there were avenues that should have been investigated dealing with foreign interests. That's a bit concerning. And I've never entirely been able to get over the fact that several different people very close to Charlie have confirmed that he believed they were going to kill him very shortly before the time of his death. And it's not exactly specified who he thinks they were, but I don't know. Yeah, it's more than enough for me to have some questions about what exactly just happened. And you know, when you look at it, just the way Joe Kent said, like, the guy, the biggest, most powerful organizer for the president, who was adamantly opposing the war in Iran, got executed publicly. Like, okay, not saying that proves anything, but it certainly warrants a full investigation, and it doesn't seem that we've gotten that. Let's see what happens at the trial. I don't know. Any thoughts on that, Rob? And then I got to wrap up.
Nah, let's call it. We did it.
We did it. Sorry, I got to wrap up a few minutes early. We'll extend the next one a few minutes late, but my wife's got to go to a thing, and I got to take the kids. So dad stuff, that comes first. All right. I love you guys. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for watching. Catch you next time. Peace.